Hello, and welcome to another episode of Starside Chat. I'm one of your hosts, Zach, and joining me, as always, is Aaron Capo.
Hello!
And a lot of news this week. There's a lot more games out, so I want to kind of talk about some of those. There's sort of a, I guess, the reviews are in for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
We have not started playing it yet. That is coming out at the end of the week as this episode is going up. So I guess maybe on next week's episode we can get into some of that. But
impressions.
Yeah. But there was a Nintendo Direct that we got to talk about. And a bunch of trailers, I feel like, happened recently for games and the Borderlands movie, so we can get into that.
Yeah.
First off, Helldivers 2 has finally added an AFK timer to prevent people from staying logged in overnight to avoid the queue times. It was a funny thing that sort of made the rounds last week where people were just like, staying in overnight and causing a lot of people anger because they couldn't get in ever.
Haven't they reported that they are trying to increase their server load or whatever to make it less of a problem?
Yeah, I think they have a little bit, but it was funny. The developers were like, you guys can hold off on buying this game because we need to increase our server capacity. I feel like both things are going very well and also very poorly at the same time if you're actively telling people to like hold off on buying the game. Yeah. Because one, it tells me that, you know, it's way more successful than they thought it was going to be, which is good, but also they are not prepared to handle it and they don't have the server capacity, which is bad. But
it's like, it's still very much in the zeitgeist. I still get like a ton of TikToks about it. Like, people are still actively all about it.
Yeah, I would like to play more. I've a little bit held off because, one, I'm trying to like power through Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth before Final Fantasy. But also, I'm just like, you know what? You guys can take a few weeks to work out this whole server capacity issue and then I'll be back. But yeah. That game is doing really well. It's really fun, and it's one of those games that like I can see like going forward, even if it's just like one night a week, just to jump in and run a few missions. It would be like a fun game to keep coming back to. I'm curious, like what they have for post-launch support too, like what they're going to add to it over time.
I think they just added a new planet today as we're recording this.
Yeah, I'm curious because they have like, it's a bunch of planets that you can go to, and like the situation is sort of like, what is the term for that? Where
evolving?
Yeah, but it's like a persistent universe, and so like it's constantly, there's these little updates and changes happening, and so the community has to kind of, oh, there's a new planet that you have to, the community has to sort of rally around and do missions there. So it makes it kind of a fun, like, active, ever-evolving thing. But, yeah, I need to jump back in and play more of that. But I'm getting towards the end of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, and I want to finish that off before Final Fantasy gets here. So I'll hold off for a little while. Do you want to talk about some trailers? And
yes. I had this Harold Halibut in my notes to add to our show notes. I was very excited to talk about it, and then I saw you already put it here. I love this thing. I watched this whole, it's a short trailer where they just are going over it, but this is the game that is basically like claymation, where they modeled everything in real life and then scanned it in. So everything has a really unique look to it. And it's also a really cool story. It's you are a guy who was on a spaceship, like a seed ship, basically, a colony ship, that landed in an ocean. And so now everything is underwater. And you're trying to figure stuff out. And there's maybe some interesting native life that nobody realized was there. But man, this thing looks great and looks like it's going to be super fun and interesting to play. Like, the story looks super interesting, too.
Yeah, it's so cool that they like handmade all the puppets and like sets and everything, and then they just like scanned it into the computer so that they could, you know, turn it into a game. But like it definitely has that stop motion look of like, you know, one of Wes Anderson's animated movies, or I don't know, insert any, you know, stop motion animated movie, but crazy that like it's a game.
Yeah. It looks really cool. It looks like, so it's to me, it looks a little bit kind of like a point and click adventure, although it's not really a point and click, I don't think. But you are, it's sort of a 2.5D space that you're going around, and you can freely travel around the different like zones of this underwater spaceship, it seems like. And it seems like very narrative based. Like you're not going to be shooting anything in this
game. Yeah.
But it looks great, and I'm very excited to check this out. There is a demo available right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, there is a demo you can download on Steam. I have not played it, but they had like a little gameplay overview trailer they released this last week, and so I watched that, and it reminded me about this game, because I remember seeing like a trailer a long time ago, I feel like.
And it's been in development for 10 years, or over 10 years, they say.
Yeah, and so it's been on my Steam wish list for a long time, and they finally are starting to like give some actual updates on it. So it is, I believe, planned for this year for release. So I guess hopefully they're able to get the game released this year, and we'll check it out. But another trailer I saw maybe like a week or two ago now, where they had some, I think IGN released this, they had some like exclusive boss battle gameplay for Moon Studios' new No Rest for the Wicked, which was one of my most anticipated games on that list when we did that episode.
Yeah.
It looks kind of a lot more Souls-like than I thought it was going to be. It looked, so I think initially everybody was like, oh, this is going to be a Diablo-like. But no, this is more of like an isometric Souls-like game. And I actually think I prefer that to the Diablo thing.
Yeah, like loot grind.
Yeah, and it just, something about their visuals and their audio design, it looks pretty incredible, I thought. So that is linked in the show notes, but definitely check out the trailer or the gameplay footage for No Rest for the Wicked, because it looks really good, actually. I was pretty impressed by this.
And then you sent me this trailer. I looked at my phone at some point this week, and you were like, you just texted me this, and you were like, this looks wild. And I watched it, and at first I was like, I was watching it on mute because I was at work, I think. And I was like, okay, this looks like a, what we're talking about is Kingmakers. Looks like a normal, like, top-down game, like you're adding little infantrymen and stuff, but then halfway through this trailer, just like a tactical guy with a car and a bunch of gun, like basically a PUBG guy, comes into frame and just starts killing all of the like knights and people with bows and arrows and stuff, and this game looks crazy.
Yeah, at first, like the first 10 seconds of this trailer is like, oh, this is just going to be some like Age of Empires top down strategy game where you're like adding some structures and stuff like that. And I was like, eh, whatever, I don't care about that. But then like it cuts to this pickup truck that basically does like a full Back to the Future like thing where it like the sparks fly and the flux capacitor activates and it sends him back in time. And he gets out of the truck with all these guns. And yeah, he does look basically like, you know, a soldier from like PUBG or something. But he just has all these guns and he's like shooting all these knights on foot and on horseback. And it almost has the feel of like, what if, what was that? What was that knights like hack and slash multiplayer game that I played a few years ago?
Yeah, what was that called? There were a couple of them, actually. You're talking about the Ubisoft one, right?
No, I'm talking about the... It was like a multiplayer game where you were like knights, and it was like really kind of funny.
I know what you're talking about. I think Ubisoft did also make their version of it, but I don't remember what the original version is called.
I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, that game was really fun. This game kind of looks a little bit like that, but almost like you have this ultimate ability where you have modern weapons instead of like the swords that you're using. But towards the end of the trailer, it looks like maybe he runs out of time and like the little like portal time travel thing activates and sends him into like the future almost. And he's looking at like, I don't know,
a giant cityscape. Yeah.
Yeah. A big cityscape. And there are like all these things flying around and Like, it looks insane. I really don't know exactly what the game is going to be, but it looks wildly fun, and I'm very curious to see what this game is like. Supposedly, this it's game, coming to Steam in early access this year.
It reminded me of, I had like a really weird gym teacher when I was in elementary school. I grew up in Texas, and one of the things we would do, I mean, gym class is like very unstructured, I feel like, in general. Like, they can just do whatever they want. One day they're just like, hey, everybody get in this parachute. And that's like, that's your lesson today. But he was really into recreating classic Texas battles with all of the children in the class. And so how he would do that is he would give everyone, basically, we had these things that were like basically rolled up socks that were like super soft that you could throw at other people. And so he would be like, well, in this battle, everybody was asleep. And so what we're going to do is everybody gets a sock, and like half of the class, you lay down and no one can move until the first person says, like, I've been hit. And then everyone gets up. So like half the other half of the class like had to kind of sneak in and then throw all their... But the one that I really remember, and the reason I bring this up, is because the one we did the most was the Battle of the Alamo. Because that thing, he would make a fort for us, and then there would be like four people in the fort, and they would each get like one sock, basically, to throw. And then everybody else surrounded the fort, and he would be like, yeah, it would have been a lot of different if I always think about traveling back in time and bringing all my guns to the Alamo, all of my like automatic weapons, which... It's crazy that he was bragging about having a bunch of automatic weapons to a bunch of like third graders. But he was like, yeah, I would love to like bring all my automatic weapons back to the Alamo and just like really let them have it. And as a kid, I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Like going back in time and having a bunch of like crazy automatic weapons where, and everybody else has like muskets basically. Wouldn't that be crazy?
What was that movie? Was it like The Final Countdown or whatever, where they're like a modern like battleship with like modern like fighter jets? Yeah. And
I have seen the cover of that, but I've never watched it.
I think I have. I haven't seen it either. I think I've seen just the cover of it, and I was like, oh, that seems like a crazy kind of fun idea. But oh, Chivalry 2 is the name of the game.
Chivalry,
I was trying to think
that's
of.
Right.
It looks like that, except instead of a normal soldier, you're running around with like shotguns and pistols and stuff, just like blowing away everybody.
I think the Ubisoft one was For Honor.
Yeah, For Honor. Well, that one is interesting because it's like knights versus samurai versus Vikings or something like that. I can't believe that game is still going. I feel like I saw a pop-up of like latest updates to that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
On like PlayStation or something like that. And I was like, that game is still going? Man. How about a second one?
Yeah.
Anyway, so after that, I don't know if we want to jump to the next trailer that we have in here. Do you want to talk the Borderlands trailer?
Yeah. What did you think of this? Let's preface this by, I think both of us don't really have any super loyalty to the Borderlands games. I've never played them. Have you?
I played the first one and some of the second one, but I think those games kind of feel like they're of a certain era where like... They're going for sort of a zany sense of humor and like tone, but they're
in modern parlance, I believe you would call them cringe now.
Yes, I think that's a good word for it. And so this movie kind of tries to replicate that tone, but like it's sort of a mishmash of like Mad Max meets Guardians of the Galaxy for its tone.
Heavily inspired by Guardians of the Galaxy.
But, like, I feel like it's, 10 years too late for this kind of a movie. Like, when was the last Borderlands, like, mainline Borderlands game? Not, like, the Tiny Tina's Borderlands.
Yeah, Borderlands 3, probably over 5 years ago?
I don't know. I feel like it's been a long time. Either way, this movie does not look good to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, this is a thing I complained about with, like, the Mario movie as well. Like... Why Jack Black as Claptrap? Like, did they need to cast him just to have his name on, like, the poster? They already have a voice actor for that part.
Yeah.
And honestly, why any of these actors? Because I get strategically if you're like a Hollywood producer and you're like, okay, the Borderlands name is going to have its fan base that are going to come see this. But like random moviegoer that sees a trailer and is like, oh, I should check that out, has no idea what Borderlands is. And they see, oh, that's the new Cate Blanchett movie. I'm going to go see that.
Is this a sequel to that Lydia Tarr movie? Is she playing Lydia Tarr in this movie? Better watch it.
Yeah, or they're like, hey, Kevin Hart is in this. I'm going to go watch that. So I get, like, strategically why you would cast, like, notable actors to play these roles. But, like, I don't know. Hollywood, this is a little bit one of the reasons why I'm starting to regret the idea of, like, video games being the next, like, fertile ground for, like, movie adaptations as opposed to, like, comic books, which seem to be, like, failing at the box office. If they just like switch over to video game movies to try to find like big box office success, I don't know if I want that anymore, because the more we see these, the more I'm like, okay, so Hollywood has like 15 actors. They're like, we have this pool of people that are going to play all the roles. So who do you want to see cosplaying as Commander Shepard in Mass Effect? Who do you want to see cosplaying as Mario?
I think Jack from Lost.
And they just like, I don't know. It looks like Cate Blanchett cosplaying as so-and-so from Borderlands. You know what
I will
mean?
Say it's hard. I don't know that there's a correct way to do it when a video game character or a comic book character has crazy colored hair. Like, there's not a great way to make that look not
natural,
like not it, because I mean they could have done something where she's just a redhead, but they had to go with like the exact tone, like color tone of the hair in Borderlands, and so it just looks crazy.
I think that is maybe part of why it looks like
that's,
cosplay.
That's what I was gonna say exactly, is that's why that's the reason it looks like cosplay, is because it's so like one-to-one with something that doesn't actually exist in real life.
Well, but also like the actors themselves are so recognizable that when you look at them, you don't see that character. You see Cate Blanchett, you see Kevin Hart. You don't. So that's why another reason why it feels like cosplay instead of like an actor you don't know that's like fading into the role. And you're just like, oh, that's this character. You just see Cate Blanchett. I don't know. Like there was a time when like George Lucas would be like, hey, I'm going to cast unknowns for Star Wars. And that movie would still do crazy good at the box office. And these days, nobody trusts that in Hollywood, I guess. So they, instead of casting unknowns, they're like, we got to get Cate Blanchett to play this character in a Borderlands movie. If they remade Star Wars, which would, you know, be terrible. But if they did that, they would cast like Chris Pratt as Luke Skywalker and Robert Downey Jr. as Han Solo. And
I think actually, I have to say, I think you're wrong, Zach. I think they would cast Timothée Chalamet as Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, that's probably true. Somebody younger. Either way, they would make like super recognizable people play the parts. And it would just be like, I've seen him in so many things that now it doesn't feel like that character anymore. It just feels like this actor cosplaying as this character. But
they haven't cracked it yet. They haven't cracked the video game movie.
I probably will not go to that movie.
Borderlands?
Yeah.
No, neither will I.
Did we have another trailer in here?
Well,
it's
the
a pretty
Elden
big
Ring.
One, isn't it? It's Elden Ring.
So this was crazy because the Nintendo Direct got announced, and I feel like a couple hours later, they were just like, FYI, also, there's going to be an Elden Ring trailer this week on the same day.
Yeah, that did seem insane to me that they dropped like maybe an hour apart from each other.
It is crazy. Yeah, because the Direct was at like 8 a.m. or something,
yeah,
or maybe 9 a.m. And then the Erdtree thing was at like 10 or 11. So it was just like back-to-back news. But I know a lot about Elden Ring. I watched a pretty long playthrough of it, but I didn't complete the watch of it. You are an Elden Lord. What are your thoughts on this trailer?
I mean, it looked crazy. It definitely looks like more Elden Ring. I don't play a lot of DLCs, to be honest, so I don't know if I will play this or not. Plus, it's like when I was playing Elden Ring initially, like you're leveling up and you're getting into it and you sort of climb that hill to get to a point where you're like, oh, yeah, I can handle all these bosses. But like cold, just like get back into it and immediately be fighting level 60, you know, enemies or whatever. It's just like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I played Elden Ring.
Well, you were looking up how to initiate this DLC before we started recording, and it sounds like, are they recommending you start a new save, or can you just like drop into this with your end level character?
They have designed it in such a way that you can start a new playthrough if you want, and you basically have to defeat Radahn and what's his name? Mog, the Lord of Blood. And you, because everybody recognized that like egg thing. I don't even know what it is. It's like a cocoon or something in Mog's boss arena that is like the body of Mikula is in there. And so basically, after you defeat Mog, you can interact with that, and it'll basically, I don't know, transport you to whatever, wherever this DLC takes place. I don't know if it's going to be like a thing where if you were to play through the game, you would just like transport to this new place, and then you would just play the entire thing out and then go back to like normal Elden Ring after that, or what the case is. But I mean, it's like a $30 DLC, so I feel like it's going to have like a good amount of content to it.
They released some statistics about it, which I did not pull up, but it's like it's the surface level, or it's like the size of the new area is the size of Limgrave. And I think there's 8 or 10 new bosses and a bunch of different kinds of new weapon techniques or whatever. It seems like it's going to be a lot of game.
Yeah. And I mean, people loved Elden Ring so much that I feel like people were on pins and needles waiting for whatever this DLC was going to be. So I think this is going to be huge when it comes out.
I have not really plugged into this. Was there already a DLC, or wasn't there something that was like a Colosseum or something? Was that just a free update?
Yeah, I think that was more like PvP focused.
And that already came out?
Yeah, I think that's already out. But okay. Yeah, I don't know if I will jump back in for this. Did they say exactly when this is coming out, or is it just like a later this year type of thing?
I think it's June 21st.
June 21st. Oh, yeah, it's in the show notes. I could have just looked at my show notes, but yeah, I think this will be something I maybe watch and not necessarily jump back in myself. But maybe the hype will get me the way it did when Elden Ring first came out. And I just like dove in and was like having a great time with it. But
yeah, who knows what we'll be playing in June?
Yeah, it's midsummer, so hard to say, but or early summer, I guess. Do you want to talk about Xbox multi-platform reveals?
Yes. So some of these were part of the Nintendo Direct, but Pentiment is available now, actually, on Nintendo Direct, on the Switch, I should say. And then Grounded is also coming. They confirmed everything, PS5 and Switch. And then Sea of Thieves and Hi-Fi Rush are coming to PS5, but also Grounded and Pentiment are coming or are already on PS5.
I thought maybe I saw that they were also going to do like physical releases for these games, or at least some of them.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I didn't see that.
But that is just funny to me because like Xbox, notably, like nobody buys physical games on Xbox, but they're going to get their physical sales in because they're going to release them on platforms where people actually buy physical games. Some of that's because of Game Pass, obviously. But
Pentiment is a great fit for Switch, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A great choice. And
Grounded,
for Switch.
I think Grounded maybe is as well, because it's basically like a Minecraft like kind of a thing where you and a bunch of friends can get together and do a thing.
Now that game, surprisingly to me, I think is doing way better than I thought it was.
It was crazy to me when it was like Game Informer's cover 1 month, because I was like, who cares about this? Like, why is this the cover of Game Informer? But apparently it has a following. I don't know. It was in early access for a long time, and then it finally got released.
Yeah, and it's another example of like one of those sort of survival crafting games, I think, that you play with your friends.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, this is not my genre, so maybe I just don't follow it well enough, but I think I heard that this is doing like a lot better than I would have thought it would.
I would believe that.
But it is, I mean, it's an interesting twist on it, especially if you grew up with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I mean, if you remember those movies.
Mm.
But anyway, do you want to get into the Nintendo Direct?
Let's do it. What are some big takeaways from this? I thought the most interesting thing to me, the thing I'm most excited about, and that I actually might check out later today, is that a game from the Sonic Mania people, that like Shadow Drop, they were just like, hey, this is available now or later today. And that is Penny's Big Breakaway, which is where I think you're an armadillo. Actually, I'm not sure exactly what type of creature you are, but you basically have a like magic yo-yo that I think eats things. And it gets bonded to you or something. I'm not exactly sure about the exact plot of the game, but I do know there's not really combat. What it is like there's constantly a bunch of penguins trying to like catch you, and you have to run away from them. And there's puzzles and things. It looks very cool, and I really like the aesthetic of it. But that was probably my biggest like, oh man, this is a great reveal.
Yeah, it sort of almost looks like a like Nintendo 64 era like 3D platforming game that got like a remaster on modern hardware is kind of what it looks like to me.
It's like a better version of that ukulele, if you remember when that came out.
Yeah, and it, from what I saw, I watched somebody play it for a little while. It looks like very fluid, like movement stuff. So yeah, that seems like a fun one.
I like that it has, hold on. Actually, say what you were going to say. I need to look this up.
Oh, I was going to switch gears a little bit and say the thing that maybe stood out to me the most was the sequel to Ender Lily's Quietus of the Night.
Oh, yeah. Ender Magnolia. I thought about you when they revealed that because I know you like that game.
I didn't finish Ender Lilies. I keep meaning to go back to it, but I played a good amount of it and was like, I thought it had a really cool aesthetic and I like a Metroidvania, and it was like one of the better like recent Metroidvanias. Actually, I don't remember what year that came out, but I played it on Switch like a couple of years ago now and really liked it. And so maybe I need to go back and like replay and actually complete that first game. And then when this comes out, play it. But you know, it's the year of the Metroidvania, as so long as Silksong comes out, I guess is the big question mark. But we've already had a like several interesting ones, and this is another one to sort of add on to that. But
what else stood out to you in this? A lot of it was stuff I didn't super care about, I have to say. It was a partner showcase, so there was nothing first party in this direct.
I did think it was interesting that they were bringing back that Disney Epic Mickey, because I do remember, I don't know if I will play this, but like I remember when I graduated college, I like got a job at a locally owned like GameStop competitor, and like we had trailers running just all the time. And I remember Epic Mickey for the Wii being like one of the ones that was like on all the time. And so I saw a lot of it, and I remember people liking it and thinking it was like a cool game. So it is interesting to me that they're bringing it back, and I'm curious how they will do it without like the Wii controls. But
yeah,
and then I like also just like a weird novelty to have like the Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection.
Yeah.
I played a ton of Star Wars Battlefront 1 and 2 way back in the day. I feel like these came out original Xbox PS2 generation. And so that generation, I had a GameCube, but my brother had a PS2. And so I remember playing the first Star Wars Battlefront with him a lot. And then like when the second Star Wars Battlefront game was coming out, like you couldn't play them on GameCube. And so I like was dying to get an actual like OG Xbox so that I could play that game. And like I had friends who played Halo, so obviously I was like, I'm definitely going to get an Xbox. So I got it basically to play Star Wars Battlefront 2. And I went back and got the first one as well. So I played a ton of these games on OG Xbox. And so it would be like, it'll be crazy to me to actually like relive some of those, the glory days of this game, but to actually be able to play them online with like 64 player multiplayer. Which is something I didn't experience. You could, because it, like Xbox Live was a thing back then, but I didn't have it, so I just played against bots all the time. But
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, and then there was Pepper Grinder was coming, but we already kind of knew about that. And yeah, they threw some more games on Nintendo Online.
Blast Corps? Did you ever play Blast Corps when you were a kid?
I didn't. Is that one I should go check out?
I loved that game. It's really weird. Like it's level based, and each level you are in a different weird vehicle, and you have to do a task. It's hard to describe, actually. It's kind of a unique game. But I remember playing it a ton. I would rent it from Blockbuster, and just like it was very unique for that time, I feel like. And so I'm excited. I might check that out.
Yeah, and then the other one we're not mentioning, because I don't think either of us super care about it, but it is sort of like one that people are waiting for, is that Unicorn Overlord game that did get a demo along with when this Nintendo Direct aired. But I feel like that's sort of a almost Fire Emblem style game, maybe, but I don't have a lot of interest in it. I think the art style is interesting, but
yeah,
people seem to be kind of hyped for that one. So do you want to talk some reviews for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
How clean have you stayed? How much have you dipped your toes in this?
I have tried to avoid them. I did look up the Open Critic page just to, because they'll have like little blurbs from like some of the reviews that don't say too much. And people seem very high on this game.
Yes, I have taken the opposite approach, and I've watched a ton of reviews of it. It seems great. It seems like the main criticism people have is that there's maybe too much stuff, which I feel like is not that big of an issue. I've seen also a lot of glowing reviews about it. But the one thing I haven't had spoiled for me, and the thing I'm most curious about, is how this game ends. And every review has been like different. It's been very polarizing. Some reviews have said they don't like what they're doing. Some reviews have said they do like it a lot. And some reviews, one specifically I'm thinking of, said they weren't sure even what was going on in the ending. And that
sounds like the
really
end
makes
of the last game.
Yeah, it's actually very similar probably. But this one, we don't really have to go into like the event that will, I mean,
I heard some people talking on a podcast, and they sort of broached the subject of the moment is all they were willing to say. And that like everybody there were like, it's crazy that everybody knows what you're talking about when you say that. I don't know, because I'm unspoiled, but that's a thing with this game, is the moment.
I am very interested to see, but yeah, mostly positive. And I feel like it's another thing where the most negative reviews I've seen have been from younger people who maybe didn't grow up with the game. But people that are like our age or older are just like, man, this is just like giving me life. This is like such a good, it's like pure adrenaline joy. It's so good. And so I'm pretty excited about it. Here's my PS5 update. I don't have one yet, but man, the clock is ticking.
You got a few days.
I got a few days to figure out if I need to purchase one. But it seems like it's a really great game that is really bloated, some people have called it. But I think it's probably just full of interesting things to do.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I don't know how much of that criticism I care about, because it seems like a lot of it, I assume, is they're talking about all the mini games that were added, which is like, well, you don't have to do all of them, right? In Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, there's a ton of stuff that you can do, a ton of like mini games and things. And you could level the same criticism there, like, oh, it's bloated because there's all this stuff. And it's like, well, you don't have to do it all. It's kind of up to you. But yeah, I guess we'll see. Maybe once I get into it, maybe it feels less avoidable in that game than in Like a Dragon, but
well, I think there's also different leveling settings with this one, where maybe you can turn off like a level scaling, and so it will be, you don't have to like grind as much, I feel like. Actually, I'm not sure about that, but looks great. I mean, it's getting a lot of 10 out of 10s, a lot of 9 out of 10s. I don't know that I've seen anything below a 9 out of 10. Game Informer maybe gave it like an 8 out of 10 or something.
They gave it an 8.5.
Yeah.
And
that was the lowest I saw. And it was from a guy who I think is pretty young, so maybe he didn't grow up with the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited to play it. And Once it comes out and I am able to dip my toes into it, I'm sure we'll be talking about it week to week. So did you have some new Stardew Valley news?
Yeah, this is not news yet, but I think in the coming weeks it will be. A while ago, 1.5 came out for Stardew, and it was a huge update. It added a ton of stuff. And he was working on that for a while, and then he said it would probably be one of the last major updates, but all of a sudden, 1.6 is going to come out. And originally, it was just going to be like bug fixes and like minor quality of life things, but it seems like now it has grown a little bit. He tweeted that it got a lot bigger than he expected it to get. And so it's adding like a couple new festivals, like three or four new festivals, like a ton of new dialogue, a ton of new interesting farm. There's going to be a new farm type, which we don't know what the farm type is going to be. People have speculated it's going to be a swamp farm. It's going to have 8-person multiplayer available on console, I think, which hasn't been the case. I think it's only been able to be 4 people on console. But the 1.6 update for Stardew Valley, he tweeted, I think, last week that it's basically in the bug fixing phase, so it will be released pretty imminently. And a problem with the 1.5 update was it launched on PC, and then there was a pretty large gap between that launching and then like it coming to all the consoles. And he said he didn't want that to happen again, so he's done some stuff to make it seem, or to make it like, to make the gap smaller, basically. So when this launches, it will probably first launch on PC, but the gap between that and all the console launches will not be super long. And it seems like it's probably going to be pretty imminent, actually. So probably sometime in March, we'll get the 1.6 update of Stardew. And he is recommending you start a new game, a new farm, to check it out, because it's a ton of stuff that throughout the game it will be added. So if you're someone who loves Stardew and you kind of haven't played it for a while, don't start a new farm just yet, because in about a month, probably there will be a ton of new stuff you can check out and you'll have to start over again anyway. So just a little Stardew update. No word on The Haunted Chocolatier, which is his new game he's working on. I don't think we've gotten any news about that for quite a while. Yeah. But supposedly it is still being worked on. He's just, I think, focusing on this 1.6 update right now.
Yeah, so hard to like develop a new game and continually be updating the other, like your previous game.
He has a team now, so that at least is like helping him out a little bit.
Yeah. So the year keeps marching on in terms of like a lot of game releases that are like very interesting. We already have, basically you can make a top 10 already. We talked about that last week, but there's even more games now to add to your pile. Pacific Drive came out. I don't know if this is like an early access thing or if this is just out, but a lot of people have been playing it and talking about it. It's a story driven survival game, with I guess maybe some roguelike elements where you're road tripping in a car. Yeah. Basically,
it looks cool. It's like the car maintenance is a big part of it, and it's one of those games where you have to sort of like look around. I guess the car doesn't have a cockpit, but like you look around where you're sitting in the car and you like use your mouse to affect things. It's not just like holding trigger down to drive, basically. I saw a really cool clip where, so the whole thing about this is like you're driving around and there are anomalies happening. And so I saw one where a guy just saw a bunch of weird people standing in the road. And so he got out of his car. They were look like crash test dummies or like mannequins or whatever. And then like when he wouldn't look at them, they would get closer and closer to him. So he had to like run away really fast. It was really interesting. It was really creepy, actually.
Yeah. And I don't know, like it almost has like the sort of visual feel of, what was that Firewatch game? Is that the game I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it's like a better version of Firewatch.
Yeah, like maybe a more interesting version of Firewatch, actually.
Where things are actually happening.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of just a walking simulator.
Now, that actually, I think, would probably make a good video or a good movie.
Yeah. Aren't they making a Firewatch movie?
I mean, that would be a slam dunk, because you don't have to... No one has, like, bright red hair in that.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be pretty easy, and actually probably be pretty... cool, like if they got a cool cinematographer, I bet you could see, like, it's just beautiful landscapes basically super high up in that Firewatch tower.
Yeah, exactly. And then Nightingale actually came out in early access. This is that open world survival crafting game from Inflection Games, which is like some former BioWare developers.
I have a question about this game.
Okay.
Have you followed it at all, or do you know about it?
I've watched some people play it, but I don't know too much of it outside of that.
Why does everyone in this game have an umbrella?
Yeah, they've all got like parasols or whatever.
What is it? A weapon, or why is it in your hand?
I'm not sure. I think you can use it sort of like a paraglider in some cases.
Oh.
But I don't, yeah, I'm not sure. It does seem strange. You sort of have like clothing wise, and sort of the aesthetic is almost like, what would you call that? Victorian, maybe?
Yeah, kind of Victorian, like steampunk sort of, yeah. I guess.
But yeah, it's another sort of survival crafting game that you would play with friends. Maybe instead of the year of the Metroidvania, this is the year of the survival crafting game. And it's just grounded, like, what flavor of that do you want? Do you want one that has Pokemon in it, or do you want parasols? But yeah, it's another option. People have been playing it. I think it's, I don't know if it's doing super well or not, but I think it's in early access. So. Mm. But I did see Shroud was playing a bunch of it, so I watched him play some, and I saw like several other people that I follow on Twitch were playing it. So it kind of had its nice little moment in the sun when it first dropped. But then also Last Epoch came out. It's technically its 1.0 release. It's been out for a long time in early access, but this is a sort of Diablo-like ARPG that I have heard does Diablo better than Diablo 4 did. So that's out there if you're interested in that style of game. And then did you see this Lisfanga game, the Time Shift Warrior?
No, this is not on my radar.
It almost looks kind of, like, I don't know what style of game it is, to be honest, but it almost looks, if you watch the gameplay, it kind of looks like sort of a Hades-like, except instead of like a normal game, it's structured in a way where, like, you start off and you have one life, and so you run your character over and you do some combat and take out an enemy, and then it like resets and you start again, but now you have the previous action you just took with that character, and now you're doing another action, and then so it's a little bit like that. What was that multiplayer game where you had like three or four lives and they would just like repeat and play in parallel as you were doing actions?
What was that? That was interesting.
I forget what that game was called. That was an interesting game that sort of came and went, unfortunately. Yeah. It didn't have like a big success rate, but this looks like sort of a kind of a top-down action game in that vein, which is interesting, but seems to be doing all right. It's like got a 77 on OpenCritic, so it's not like this one hasn't like really ended up in the zeitgeist, but it's kind of an interesting game just looking at it. And then another game that is in the zeitgeist and is doing way better is a game called Balatro. I actually watched a trailer and they called it like Balatro, so I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But I've heard a ton of people talking about this on podcasts, and a bunch of people I follow have been streaming it as well. But it has all the dirty words, so I know you're not going to like this. like every dirty word you could think of. Roguelike deck builder, and it's based on poker. I have actually played this, and it is actually really fun. This is not a game that I would normally play because of all those dirty words that are in the description of it. I also am not like big on poker, but you don't really need to be because you're not playing against anyone. You're just trying to come up with hands to come up with a certain score. And you have like different modifiers and multipliers that will help you get there. And they're basically, it is like roguelike. So you're trying to do like beat basically eight levels, but they call them antes because they're using all the poker terminology. And with each level, there are like three rounds you play through, like two normal rounds and then a boss round. And you're getting these jokers that sort of work a little bit like, how would you describe that? They're a little bit like charms in like Hollow Knight or something, or like power-ups that you would get in like Hades or something like that, where basically you can have five of them at any one time and you can sell them and pick a different one later if you want. But there are different ways to help sort of power up the multipliers and the cards that you're playing. But yeah, you draw like a bunch of cards and then you basically form, you have like four hands that you can play to try to get to the score that you're trying to score. And you can discard like three or four times. And at any time, if you're not super familiar with poker hands, which I was not because I'm not big on poker, you can just hit a button and it'll bring up all the different hands that you can make to sort of help you be thinking of that. And you can sort the cards and like by rank or by suit. And so, yeah, you're making different hands. And you can also get these upgrades to upgrade the multiplier for each hand. So it gets to a point where, like, say you're using a lot of one type of hand, if you keep leveling that up, it makes it so that the multiplier for that could be more powerful than using like a higher tier hand. So you could just keep using that one. And I don't know, there's a lot of interesting elements to it. It is like way more fun than you would think it would be based on the description. So it's definitely worth checking out if you like any of that stuff. But
interesting. It's on Switch, right?
It is on Switch. I think it's on Xbox as well. And it's on PC, which is where I've played it. It's just like the kind of game that you want to like, I'm going to turn on a TV show or a podcast. I'm just going to click around on something. It's like perfect for that type of thing. But and I guess I can give you a progress update on Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Let's get into what we've been playing and watching. I'm curious to see what chapter you're in now.
I'm into chapter 12. It has continued to do the thing where it sort of ping pongs back and forth between Hawaii with Kasuga and the crew there and Kiryu and the crew in Yokohama. And so I believe there are 14 chapters. I Googled it at one point. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I think I'm getting towards the final couple of chapters, but I'm desperately trying to enjoy the game, but also get through it and finish it before Final Fantasy VII Rebirth comes out at the end of the week. So, I just have loved this game and have been playing so much of it, and it was fun to check out some of the different classes as well and how beneficial that can be just to like be able to add some different moves from different classes to I call them classes, they're referred to as jobs in game, but just to be able to like if I'm playing as Kiryu and I'm using his like Dragon of Dojima job and he's got mostly like physical attacks, if I want to like I can swap it up and play around and level him up as like an Aquanaut for a while just to have some like frost or water based moves just so that I can also key into some of those like elemental weaknesses as well. But I don't know, I've been having so much fun with it. I think it'll be hard for another game to top it, but again, we got maybe the biggest game of the year coming out next week, so
it's true.
And that's all I've been playing. I've bounced back and forth between Like a Dragon and Balatro, and then I have not put any more time into Helldivers because I'm just kind of waiting it out a little bit with that. But what about you?
Still checking out Apex pretty regularly. I really like that triple take. I've been getting into more. I had a mission or like a thing to get 10 stars on the battle pass that was like use snipers a whole bunch. So I got really into that, which I had always avoided. But it was pretty good. And I realized I am maybe better at doing that than just like holding down fire and kind of to maintain a stream of like bullets or whatever. But so yeah, Apex has been good. I've still been watching Delicious in Dungeon every week. It comes out on Thursdays. That's still been really great. And then last night, I watched a little movie called Deja Vu. Have you seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that... Who's in that?
That's Denzel Washington.
That's right. Yeah, I've seen that movie.
I had seen it before, but it had been a while. And I was on kind of a Tony Scott kick because I watched the original Top Gun earlier this week just because it was available. I was like, man, this is really good. And so Deja Vu, I remember really liking. I like a lot of Tony Scott movies. Like Spy Game is really good. I think he did The Last Boy Scout, which is just like a really weird Bruce Willis movie. That's like a kind of a cool cop movie. Trying to think of another Tony Scott movie. He did a lot of them. He is no longer with us, but Deja Vu is great, and it had been a long time since I watched it. I don't know what year it came out, but I feel like it came out when we were in high school. It's a time travel movie where Denzel Washington, and a crazy thing about it is that Val Kilmer is in it before he got super sick, but it's like kind of in modern times, so it's kind of weird to see a modern times Val Kilmer movie, but he's really great in it, and it's got a really interesting premise, and it's cool. It's a great little movie. It's on Peacock right now. That's why I watched it. But Deja Vu is something, if you haven't seen it and you're interested, if you like a kind of a, I wouldn't call it sci-fi, although they do have like the ability to look back in time, basically. It's a good time travel movie. I would say that. If you like time travel movies, definitely check it out. It's got a unique take on it.
It's been a long time since I've seen this movie, but I do remember seeing it at one point. And yeah, it was pretty interesting.
I liked it. I mean, Tony Scott, I feel like, has a really unique style. And it's very, even though I think this probably came out in the 2000s, I associate him more with like the 80s and 90s. And so it was kind of nostalgic watching it because it was like a time long gone by for like filmmaking.
Yeah. Every now and then, it's fun to go back and watch old stuff. Speaking of which, I forget where I saw this, but I think there was a report that came out somewhat recently about how people are more watching like old movies and TV shows on like streaming services rather than like new stuff. And it's like, well, that seems right. <That's>, all the new stuff sucks, so everybody's just watching old stuff. That makes sense to me. But Dune 2 is coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, Dune 2. I probably will go to the theaters to check that out. I am eagerly awaiting. I never got to see The Boy and the Heron in theaters, so I'm waiting for that to come available on digital. But for now, and nothing really else. I mean, other than Delicious in Dungeon, which I'm watching every week, I'm not really watching anything else. I maybe am going to play Final Fantasy VII next week, so I'll have something to talk about, but I will have to buy a PS5 for that to happen.
I'm excited for both of those things to happen. we can talk about your experience with your newly purchased PS5.
You know what I was thinking about also?
Yeah.
Silksong is imminent. It's going to be available on everything, probably. Have you thought about where you're going to play it?
I haven't, actually.
Because the... It seems... I played it on... I played Hollow Knight on Switch, and it was great. But the benefit of a PS5... is you get those adaptive triggers that are maybe going to be incorporated into the game in an interesting way. And no other place is going to have that. And so I wonder if that will be the definitive way to play Hollow Knight, is with those adaptive triggers, so you get those features as well.
Did they say that they were planning on doing that?
No, they didn't. And who knows if they will. But I mean, it was at a PS5, or it was at a PlayStation like event at one point.
To be honest, outside of like first party Sony stuff, you really don't see a lot of people take advantage of the adaptive triggers. Like I'm playing Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth on PS5, and I don't think they've used them once. So mostly the touchpad is like a map button these days. They do incorporate the touch a little bit. Like I know like Helldivers 2, I think maybe does use the adaptive triggers a little bit. But they also, like the touchpad, you pop up the little mini map and you can like use the touchpad to like scroll around on it. But that's also like a Sony published game. So I guess it makes sense that they would have some support for the DualSense.
Well,
but
Apex also, I think, got support for those adaptive triggers with its latest update.
Yeah, I need to check that out. But it would surprise me big time if they had any sort of DualSense support whatsoever for Silksong. It would be cool if they did, but it would be a surprise. I don't think that's expected, but I mean, it would still, like, I played Hollow Knight just this last month on Xbox because I think it was on Game Pass, maybe?
It is, yeah. And Silksong is supposed to be day one Game Pass as well.
So, I mean, maybe that's just the answer is play it wherever it's on Game Pass. But
yeah.
But, I mean, I love... Oh, no, wait. I did play it on PS5. Or yeah, because I had the PS4 version, so I played it on PS5. I think I a little bit wanted to get the trophies until I realized how difficult and long it would take to get all of them. So
those godmaster
I gave up
things.
On that pretty quick. But so, no, I did play it on PlayStation. But, I mean, Switch is also a good option, I feel like.
It's true.
Just to have it on the go. Yeah, it'll be... That's a good question. If it does drop, where do I want to play it? I guess it depends on if it launches with a physical copy.
That is the million-dollar question, because I feel like they would be crazy not to, because they have to know that it has a huge following. I feel like every time there's a Nintendo Direct, people are asking for it. It's like the new Elden Ring, basically. And so for them to not, like, for it to just to be digital, I feel like is crazy. But maybe that will happen, and we'll just have, like, Fangamer make physical releases of it. But I feel like they have to know they could make a ton of money with a physical release.
Yeah, hopefully, if anything, one of the reasons it's taking a long time is because they're planning a, like, physical collector's edition to come, like, at, like, day one launch. Like, if they had that, that would be awesome. Hopefully that's partially to blame for why it's taking so incredibly long to get this game released. But because obviously they're a small team and they're probably having to work with some other teams to get something like that. But I'm excited. Hopefully that game comes out at some point this year.
I think 2024 is going to be the year, but we'll see, I guess. So I thought that there was going to be some sort of announcement in February. But to coincide with, like, the anniversary of everything. But that did not happen. So we're just sort of still laying in wait to see what's going on.
Well, on that note, do you have any parting wisdom?
Oh, man, I did have parting wisdom. What was it? I should have written it down. Hold on a second. Let me just think for a second. Oh, here's something. This isn't originally what I had written down, but... I've been looking at a new RPG, a new tabletop RPG to check out. I am a big proponent of Pathfinder. We've talked about it on the show. And I have played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons as well. But I needed something a little less rules heavy. And I decided to check out Monster of the Week, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse type of game. Powered by the Apocalypse is a system that allows you to... other systems kind of jump off of it. So... Like the same kind of, it's got the same skeleton basically as Powered by the Apocalypse, but things have been added. And Monster of the Week is sort of an X-Files / Buffy the Vampire / like Supernatural type of game where very rules light, but has interesting rules. And there's not as much math involved. You only ever roll two dice and then you add like one number to it. But it's a game where it's supposed to be serialized, so it's like a Supernatural or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where every week there's a different monster and the team sort of investigates it, and it's got a lot of interesting gameplay mechanics that are simple to understand, but you can use them in interesting ways for cool roleplay opportunities. What drew me to it is the like archetypes that you can select, so you can be like the Gumshoe. Or a really interesting one is the Mundane, which is the Mundane is just like a normal character who's like not involved in the world of monsters. But you have really interesting moves because of that. I'm not explaining it well, and maybe I actually will make a little featurette about it. We can talk about next week because I don't think I'm actually going to play it this week. I'm just sort of prepping a game. But it was never really on my radar until... The McElroy brothers did a season of their Adventure Zone where they used Monster of the Week as the system they were using. This was like three or so campaigns ago, but it was a really cool campaign, and I meant to check it out, and I never did, but I finally got the books. There's a supplement to it as well that adds a couple different more archetypes, but if you're interested in Dungeons & Dragons or role-playing in general, but you don't really vibe with all the like numbers and having to figure out like advantage and stuff like that, and It all just seems too complicated. Check out Monster of the Week, especially if you're a big, like, Supernatural or X-Files fan, because it allows you to basically play in those worlds in really interesting ways. Monster of the Week.
Monster of the Week. Well, on that note, go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.